You are Locked On Lakers. Your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Everybody, welcome to Locked On Lakers for Tuesday. Brian Kamenetsky and Andy Kamenetsky. Crazy day in the NBA. Tons of stuff we want to cover today. We do want to let you know that today's episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra at only 2.6 carbs and 95 calories. It's only worth it if you enjoy it. Stay tuned for the Ultra Player of the Week coming up later in the episode. We've got a really fun mailbag question that is playoff related that will open up as the show goes on. Andy, the Lakers, 27% of them have been sold by Philip Anschutz. Something that happened. That was over the weekend, right?
Yes. Yeah. That happened either Friday or Saturday. But fairly recently, we now know a lot of things in terms of the power structure of the Lakers, including who would potentially have the first right of refusal to take over the team in the event of the Buss family selling. So
we'll give you guys a hint. It rhymes with Flamenetsky.
Yes. This is also our last show.
Who's got two thumbs and right of first refusal?
Yeah.
This guy. Okay, that's four right. Thumbs. Well, no, I just meant me. You too, collectively.
Yes.
But let's start, Andy, with what was a crazy interview on Monday. Dan Patrick's radio show, Scottie Pippen with a book to sell and bourbon to sell shows up and
bourbon to haps to perhaps both sell and sample.
It's hard to say.
It seems like, if nothing else, we'll get into this. The bourbon works. The bourbon is all 94 proof that it claims to be.
It may be. But so Scottie Pippen, Hall of Famer, Bulls star, goes on Dan Patrick's show. Of course, Scottie Pippen was in the news last week for unsolicited comments about Kevin Durant and his style of play in a GQ interview. And so
also promoting the bourbon in the book.
Correct. He's on a tour.
Yes, he is.
And in the process of doing this, he basically, Dan Patrick is asking him about, you know, the Kukoc shot and all the, you know, the famous moment where Pippen refuses to go in the game because the play is drawn up for Tony Kukoc. In that same GQ interview, Scottie Pippen says, there's a racial component to that. Dan Patrick asks him about it again and essentially tells him, like, you know, you're, by saying there's a racial component that he drew up that play for Tony Kukoc and not you, you're saying that Phil Jackson is a racist, to which Scottie Pippen replies, I don't have a problem with that. There you go. And, you know, look, a lot more people know about Scottie Pippen's bourbon now than they perhaps used to. What makes this interesting, I think, not just the Phil Jackson angle of it, from a Lakers fan, one of the supporting incidents that Pip mentioned in as evidence when pressed by Dan Patrick on this point about whether or not Phil Jackson was a racist was the idea that Phil wrote about, buried really, Kobe in his book. Which one was that?
The Last Season.
The Last Season. And then turns around and
book about
coaches the
book
him
for
again.
People that, for the people who don't know it, it was the book that Phil wrote after the 2004 season, the one with mm-hmm. Kobe, Shaq, Karl Malone, Gary Payton.
Right. Calls him uncoachable,
right.
All that stuff.
Right. And this was all unfolding in terms of the way he documented this as Colorado was playing out, mm-hmm. all that stuff. The team breaks up. And this book came out during that 1 year gap between Phil Jackson's first stint with the Lakers and the second.
All right. So which part of this do you want to do first? Because we're going to get to the Kobe aspect of it in a minute here, or we can start there, or like which part do you want to start with?
I guess we should start with the Kukoc moment, because that's actually what set all of this in motion.
Yes.
And what I think is really interesting about this to begin is, like, this is something that has sat with Scottie Pippen really badly for a long time. And, like, this is clearly a moment in Pippen's mind that was robbed for him by Phil Jackson. Like, this was supposed to be a big shot in Scottie Pippen's career.
Oh, yeah. Go back and listen. If you haven't heard the clip of him talking about this, he sets a land speed record for third person references.
Yes.
And like, it is amazing how many he stuffs in there, almost as if he wasn't a person who was there.
Yeah, he kept saying, if you've got Scottie Pippen there, you know, why would you not drop this play for Scottie Pippen? You know, Scottie Pippen had been Michael Jordan's sidekick for years. Scottie Pippen's finally got the opportunity.
Scottie Pippen was an MVP candidate, you know, all that stuff. It's like almost disassociative in a weird and uncomfortable way. But yeah, you are 100% right. He looks at that as something, as this moment that was robbed from him. And now, by the way, is remembered as one of the most infamous in playoff history.
And that, I was going to say, that's actually the irony of this. Beyond the fact that it's become more infamous than memorable, the reality is, even if Scottie Pippen had taken this shot, and just like Tony Kukoc made the shot, it ultimately ends up just a game winner as part of a series where the Bulls lose in the first round, game three. So in the middle of this series, other than like Bulls fanatics who remember everything, nobody's going to remember this moment.
And even most of them would have forgotten. Right, or if he just goes on the court.
Right.
Kukoc makes, misses, whatever. He just doesn't.
But I'm just saying the most extreme example of this in terms of what Scottie Pippen wanted from this, where he actually gets his number called. He makes this shot. It's a game winner in the playoffs. Ultimately, things play out the same. The Bulls get eliminated in that first round. And in all likelihood, nobody remembers this. So he actually has created more of a bad image for himself
as
somebody refusing to check in, being, you know, a non-team guy, a non-winner, than he ever would have created glory if he had had his number called and made the shot.
You're right. And what strikes me about this part of it is, my point here isn't even to evaluate, is Phil Jackson a racist or not? We'll get into some of these things, you know, that are unique to Phil that make Pippen's point here not, in some ways, not as crazy as he sort of the headlines project it. But Pippen is one of these guys that obviously resents being thought of and seen, particularly, I think, by, you know, people who didn't really watch that, you know, get a chance to watch them. You know, if you're 30 and under, whatever it is, you didn't grow up on Bulls basketball, whatever it might be, didn't get a chance to see it. Like, he's sort of just thought of now as Michael's sidekick.
And yeah, then
you
go
when you watch. Right, you the ultimate Rob, and you go and watch the Last Dance and the miniseries and all this stuff, the big documentary, and like that's really how Pippen is portrayed in this thing. Scottie Pippen made, I forget what year it was, but he made the all greatest of all time team or whatever. Yep. Like, he is genuinely one of the greatest players, who two-way players particularly, who ever played, but isn't remembered that way. And I think is obviously bothered by it, and has a back in my day, we did the game right. Like, this is why he's bringing up KD unsolicited, all these other things turned up to 30. Like, his dial goes, it's way past 11, Andy. It goes to like 30. It's weird to watch. It's uncomfortable. It's sad. He's not wrong. He's not entirely wrong, but it's so unfortunate to see.
Well, I mean, what I also think, though, is really interesting about this in terms of the way he portrays Phil Jackson and flat out says that this was a racially motivated decision to call that play for Tony Kukoc. And, you know, it should be stated, Phil Jackson has made some, over the course of his career, racially insensitive remarks. You know, he most infamously, the remark about LeBron James's posse and the racial connotations that obviously are connected to that. And there have been other ones throughout the course of his career. Scoop Jackson wrote a piece in the mid 2000s documenting some of this that you can find for ESPN. And, you know, I don't know if these remarks in total, certainly I don't think the play called for Kukoc definitively prove that Phil Jackson is a racist.
I don't mean to cut you off, but like the difference between the comments, which I think might be more revelatory, and like the kind of racist who in that kind of moment is going to be like, I'm going to call a play for the white guy instead of the black guy. That's a certain kind of racist.
But though, what I do think that in the way he talks about Phil Jackson in general, and you know, bringing up Kobe, and we'll get into that in terms of the way he depicted Kobe in the last season. Phil Jackson was often, to be totally honest, an asshole.
Absolutely.
We covered Phil Jackson for several years. We will preface it by saying we got along with Phil. To the best of my knowledge, Phil respected us. Our working relationship was fine. Phil often could be very charismatic. He could be very funny. He was obviously very smart. Phil could be a real asshole, though. Very
by design, and often I think by design. Yes, I think he was one of these guys who liked, which is, you know, in, you know, some of the stuff that he's, that some of these things that he says, he is a guy who was always like pushing boundaries, pushing buttons,
saying,
you know, the Brokeback Mountain thing, all that stuff is like, all he is a guy who likes, and when you do that, when you like to provoke and be kind of that guy, you step in it sometimes, whether intentionally or not. And I think this is where I think the Kobe tie, and we'll read the quote that Pippen talks about when on Dan Patrick's show on Monday, tying it back to Kobe here. And we'll do that in the next segment. But this is where that quote kind of becomes relevant. The Kobe tie becomes really relevant in Phil's personality.
Like, whether you know, you and I don't know Phil Jackson well enough to truly know who he is in terms of the way he sees race, the way he views race, that sort of thing. Again, Scottie Pippen's prime example of this, I don't think supports that supposition. But I do think, though, it is a reflection of spending that much time around somebody who could be very intentionally, as you said, abrasive, and also
provocative.
And somebody, I think it's important to note this, that was often enabled to be abrasive like this, enabled to often be an asshole like this. So exactly like Michael Jordan, you know, and it's very clear in these comments from Scottie Pippen that he carries a lot of resentment, not just by the way he was portrayed as Michael Jordan's sidekick, but towards Jordan in general. And, you know, the mythology of Michael Jordan, he is basically calling bullshit on a lot of it. And, and it feels like The Last Dance has really sparked a lot of bad feelings towards
it was clearly aligned. Yeah. Let's do the Kobe thing. Because the quote that he gives about Kobe, again, like you say, Andy, I agree with you, isn't a great example of Phil Jackson being a racist, but it is a great example of Phil Jackson's personality. And in part, you know, very revelatory about the dynamic between him and Kobe. We'll do that next.
Locked On Lakers brought to you by Michelob Ultra. And this week's Michelob Ultra player of the week is Paul George. Yes, that Paul George from the Clippers. Not exactly a fan favorite in these Locked On Lakers parts, Brian, but you've got to give credit where it's due. The Clippers, Monday night, Game 5, needing to stave off elimination against the Suns on the road, missing Ivica Zubac on top of Kawhi Leonard and Serge Ibaka. Paul George has been fantastic in these playoffs, in particular when the Clippers have had their backs against the wall. This game was no exception. He helped fuel a 116-102 win, 41 points on 15-20 shooting, 13 rebounds, 6 assists, 3 steals. Objectively speaking, Brian, if this were basically anybody else on the planet, Laker fans could find joy in a performance
But they find more, but they all, you know, from a Laker fan's perspective, they got the joy from the missed free throws. So that counts.
And that's true. Yeah. They found some joy in the series as a whole, if not necessarily this game. But again, from a pure basketball standpoint, this was a hell of a thing to watch. Michelob Ultra. Yes. Only 2.6 carbs, 95 calories. Remember, it's only worth it if you enjoy it. Joy creates success.
So on the Dan Patrick show, asked to give sort of an example of Phil Jackson's racism, Scottie Pippen points to The Last Dance, the book, the last season, I'm sorry, the last, you know, right? That's the name of the book.
It's called The Last Season.
The Last Season. The Last Dance is a documentary. Here's what he said. Quote from Pippen. I mean, do you remember Phil Jackson left the Lakers, went and wrote a book on Kobe Bryant, then came back and coached him? I mean, who would do that? You name someone in professional sports who would do that, you know. I think he tried to expose Kobe in a way that he shouldn't have. You're the head coach, and you're the guy that sits in the locker room and tells the players, this is a circle. This is everything stays within the circle because that's what this team is about. That's what team is about. But you as the head coach open it up, and now you go out and try to belittle at that time probably one of the greatest players in the game. Nothing in that paragraph is wrong.
Yeah.
Not one thing that Scottie Pippen says there about Phil Jackson and his treatment of Kobe and the hypocrisy of it and the ego involved and all that stuff in the last season is wrong. It was a betrayal of sort of the inner sanctum of the team, which Pip is exactly right. Phil preached endlessly.
Yes.
I'm glad you brought that up. It's a terrible example for him being a racist, but it's a great example of Phil being, as you put in the previous segment, an a-hole, and an illustration of the kind of ego that Phil Jackson presumably still has.
Brian, this particularly had then.
And I'll just finish, it was part of what made that whole thing both work and also in the end dissolve was it wasn't the two egos of Kobe and Shaq, and it's just that thing, whatever. It was the three. It was Kobe, Shaq, and Phil. And a lesser coach wouldn't have been able to manage the two of them. You needed a coach with that kind of outsized personality and ego and belief in self. But it also was part of the dynamic that helped break up the team.
Yeah, I mean, to support the point you were making, and it's a really good one, about how much Phil preached the sanctity of the locker room and therefore violated a lot of that with the book coming out. This is somebody that felt that the locker room was such a sacred place for coach and team. He felt justified booting Jerry West from it. Mm-hmm. Remember that incident that, you know, was just part of what eventually led to the Lakers choosing Phil over Jerry West.
Which, by the way, is another example of Phil doing things that are intentionally provocative.
Yes.
In part because he can.
And
as power grabs and as demonstrations of influence and power
and
lording it over people and all that.
Enabled by a lot of people, including the media. The media did not do a great job in terms of calling out times where Phil went out of bounds. And, you know, that includes everybody, including people like us who covered him at the time. You know, I think we were fairly honest in portraying Phil's arrogance. We would talk about that openly, but there were certainly things that we did not either do a good enough job explaining or even do a good enough job recognizing. Phil even admitted that the book was really unfair to Kobe. He has said that one of the reasons he came back to coach the Lakers was he felt that he went too far in burying Kobe and actually put Kobe in a position that was worse than he deserved, in part because of that book. Like, he actually, it's funny. So many people, this one part of the book still blows my mind in terms of what people didn't sort of notice in the moment, or frankly, didn't read in the moment. There was so much focus on Phil describing Kobe as uncoachable. You know, that was one of the big headlines from that. He actually said that he did not think it was out of the realm of possibility that Kobe committed sexual assault. Like, he actually said that in the book, where he gets this call from Mitch Kupchak and says, "You're not going to believe this," he said, telling me about Kobe and the rape allegations in Colorado. "Was I surprised? Yes, but not entirely. Kobe can be consumed with surprising anger, which he's displayed towards me and his teammates." Like, I remember reading that and being like, oh my God. Like, that is a really, really strong statement to be making. And Phil, years later, admitted that his daughter had been sexually assaulted, I believe roughly around that time. And it made the topic, understandably, a very raw, sensitive subject for him. But it's still pretty out of bounds.
It is a little bit more reflective of what people thought at the time.
Right. Like, but to float that, though, I mean, just like as an offhand remark, that's pretty out of bounds. I mean,
absolutely. And it's it's such a crazy dynamic that, you know, and not that I necessarily think, you know, it would be fascinating because the first phone calls that would have gone to people today, every journalist who had Kobe's number would have texted him, called him, whatever, to try to get a comment. Is Phil Jackson a racist? All these things. Well, Kobe went back to play for him. Kobe lobbied for Phil. And so, I mean, presumably either Kobe was just be like, yeah, I
don't know if he lobbied a little for Phil, but he accepted Phil.
He certainly approved of it.
Yes. Yes, he did.
You know, either he was willing to tolerate playing for a guy who, okay, maybe he's a little bit racist, but he's going to get me more rings, which competitive as Kobe was, is possible. I mean, there's so much about the egos here with Phil and all that other stuff. He was monumentally egotistical, and he is in the modern age of Twitter, were he not social media, were he not a Hall of Fame Mount Rushmore basketball coach, he could have just as easily been one of these like YouTube, you know, what's his name, like Aaron Paul, like, you know, provocateur type. You know, people just does stuff to get in people's faces just to be a jerk about it. Like 12, you know, 17-year-old Phil Jackson in 2019 might be doing that instead of studying Native American culture and playing basketball.
I never thought about it that way,
you know what I'm saying? He loved to push buttons and particularly lord his authority and his intellect over people.
Yeah, it really took the New York years where he was pretty unsuccessful running the Knicks for I think a lot of that veneer to, I wouldn't even say for him to drop it, for it to be dropped for him, for it to start get chipped away.
That's when the posse thing happened.
Yep.
He felt by the time he got to New York, the Phil Jackson thing
had run its
felt course. So dated.
Yes. Yes.
It was so dated. It was like watching Tom Cruise in a period piece. Like it didn't work. It didn't fit. He was an alien kind of dropped into a job, into a time, into an NBA that no longer existed, where his skill set had not adapted. And he had not evolved in the slightest. I mean, what makes Greg Popovich so remarkable over the however long he's been in San Antonio is his ability to evolve. Steve Kerr has shown an ability, although Warriors fans might disagree, but to say, you know, an ability to evolve. Like, that's what these guys at the pro level who last forever can do. Phil never did that. And so,
just for clarification, Brian, when you were talking about Tom Cruise in period pieces, were you talking about A, Far and Away, B, The Last Samurai, C, Interview with the Vampire, or D, all of the above?
Yes. Although I will say, I really like Last Samurai.
Okay.
And I think he does. That's probably as close as you get to putting him in a period piece where it kind of works. But yes, he is. Certain actors are just really hard to put in period pieces and have it work. They just don't look right. All right, let's go to the mailbag. We'll save Anschutz and the Dodgers owners and all that for tomorrow.
Okay.
Let's give good attention to the mailbag, pay that off. We'll do that next.
Locked On Lakers brought to you by Bet Online. Bet Online, the fastest, easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Baseball season's in full swing. You can track all the action at Bet Online this week. Tons of sports action on the go. Get all the latest news, odds, info for your sporting needs, including MLB, NBA, NHL, UFC, MMA. Before the next pitch, head over to BetOnline on your laptop, mobile device. Check out all the great sporting news, sign-up bonuses, contest information. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. This is your chance to get into the game as teams are in the playoffs. Head to the website, use your mobile device, sign up today, receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit using the promo code LOCKEDON. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts.
All right. Locked On Lakers also brought to you by the folks at rockauto.com. I am not a car guy per se, Andy, but what I do have is a pretty good bolt bleep meter. I can walk into the store and I get that tingly spidey sense when somebody's trying to sell you something that you don't need. It's a part, whatever it might be. They're trying to sell you the thing they've got in the back room that they haven't gotten rid of in 6 months, or the only part that they have access to in the catalog, whatever it is. I don't want that. I don't need that. I have a computer in my pocket. It's called my phone. It gives me access to rockauto.com. And that's all I need. Chain stores, I got different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers. Rockauto.com's prices are the same for everybody, and they are reliably low, 20, 30, even 50% lower than chain stores or a new car dealership. And they got everything that you need for your daily driver, for your classic, whatever it is. So go to rockauto.com right now, see all the parts available for your car or truck, right? Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box, so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com.
Today on the road to the finals, our NBA playoffs coverage brought to you by Michelob Ultra. It's only worth it if you enjoy it. And at 2.6 carbs, 95 calories, we can all enjoy the games a little more this season.
So we love getting stuff in the mailbag. At Cam Brothers on Twitter. You can also quite literally email us. CamMinetskyBrothers@gmail.com is the best way to do it. You can also leave questions and comments for the mailbag on iTunes. Leave us a 5-star review and we're much more likely to read whatever question you leave. This one comes from our friend Kyle Downey, who is a great supporter of the show and a great supporter of all of our social media stuff. And so, Kyle, thank you very much. We really appreciate it. He tweeted us at Cam Brothers, "I think the Lakers would have repeated, especially seeing who's still in the playoffs now. How confident are y'all," that's us, "that the Lakers would have repeated if they were healthy? Also, what moves should the Lakers make this summer?" Let's skip the second part, because the second part is like 2 weeks worth of content that we need to mine over the course of the offseason. Yeah. Slow down, Kyle. One question at a time. But let's do the first part. How confident are you that the Lakers would have repeated had they stayed healthy, given what you've seen over the course of these playoffs?
I mean, obviously, I think a fully healthy Lakers squad would have had as good a chance as any. But right, like, especially when you watch Clippers Suns play out, you know, game five notwithstanding with Paul George, because, you know, we talked about earlier, he was fantastic. You've seen fatigue set in with him as a star of the team. You've seen at times fatigue become a factor with both of these teams. You know, games three and four were pretty damn ugly. And I've just started wondering, when I thought about Kyle's question, if even had the Lakers stayed completely healthy, if fatigue would have eventually caught up to them. It's so hard to go deep into these playoffs on the heels of a finals run from last season, you know, when everything was so compressed and you had so little off season. I just wonder if they would have run out of gas. Even
it's
if
possible. Yeah. And it's funny too, because like, there's two ways to look at this, and I'll answer this kind of quickly for this year. But then I think the most important thing is really about next year, not this year, because a healthy Lakers team facing the rest of the bracket as is obviously has a massive opportunity to go back to the finals at the very least. Because I mean, you and I both think that if AD had not gotten hurt, they would have won that series. They were winning in it. Yep. I think they would have won that series. I think most people think they would have won that series. That's not to take anything away from the Suns. But then you get the Nuggets, who they beat last year already, and the Nuggets don't have Jamal Murray. I think they would have won that series. You get the Clippers without Kawhi Leonard. I think they would win. I would pick them to win that series. So that gets them to the finals. Now, would I pick them against the Bucks? I actually don't know. I've kind of been a fan of the Bucks since about halfway through the season, when people gave up on them because Drew Holiday wasn't there and everybody just decided the Bucks were terrible. I was like, wait a minute. And you put Drew Holiday back there, big Drew Holiday fan, and all of a sudden the Bucks are really good again. They seem to have found something. I don't know who that series would favor, but I think they would have gotten to the finals. And, you know, do you bet against AD and LeBron James in the finals? It's most people wouldn't. So I think the answer to that is yes, but you have the same, and this is what I think is so exciting about next year, because this is the first year in the NBA in a long time where, as a, maybe it's not great for casuals, I don't know, and I don't really care, But as a fan of the NBA, like, you don't know who's going to win, and you haven't known. And like, that makes this postseason really exciting. Next year is probably not going to be that much different, because while you have the three-headed monster in the Eastern Conference, that thing is always, you're always going to be worried about injury now. In the West, if everybody's healthy, the Clippers are obviously excellent. Denver is obviously excellent. Phoenix is obviously excellent. The Lakers are excellent. You know, a couple other teams look at Phoenix and think they could make a similar jump with maybe adding one or two players, maybe not even stars, but just like, you know, a couple glue guys or a second or third guy, maybe from Memphis or whatever it might be. I don't know who's going to win next year. And, you know, the Lakers, I think, will be as good a favorite if they stay healthy as anybody. So I think that's the good news. They don't need a whole lot of tweaking. If they can become better shooters, I think they can absolutely maybe even be slight favorites to win. But it's a hard question to answer for this year, because you have to assume, are you assuming that they face everybody healthy or everybody the way they are? Well, if that's the case, then the Lakers get the break that Phoenix got by not facing a healthy Lakers team. So,
I don't know. I mean, they certainly, had they stayed healthy, health this particular playoffs might have just been enough given what some of these other squads have been dealing with. It reminds me a little bit, it's not apples to apples, because that team that I'm about to mention had chemistry issues that, to the best of my knowledge, the 2021 Lakers didn't, but it reminds me a little bit of the 2011 Lakers that we covered that was going for a three-peat, and they ran out of gas. I mean, they had a lot of other problems as well, but a huge problem they had
and
was
a longer run.
Right. Well, I was going to say, they were trying to go to their fourth straight finals while winning three straight championships. That's more mileage than the Lakers were dealing with, but those teams had normal off seasons and the Lakers didn't. So, there still is a commonality with fatigue as a potential problem for these Lakers, if not
possibly. Yeah, and I think you fatigue might have gotten them in the end. I mean, by the finals, everybody is exhausted.
Yeah,
and so it's really, if you can get through the mental exhaustion of it, I think that's the physical exhaustion might actually be fairly equitable between all the teams that make it. But the mental exhaustion is different. But I do think a healthy Lakers team, if they face the same teams with the same injuries that everybody else, hey, I think they get through the finals. They certainly would have been the prohibitive favorite. So thank you, Kyle Downey, for sending that in. We've put out a couple calls for more mailbag questions. We'll be answering them throughout the week. We've gotten some good ones. We'll keep doing it. The best ones get answered. Again, at Cam Brothers on Twitter, CaminetskyBrothers@gmail.com, or you can leave a 5-star review on iTunes to really, really juice your chances of getting that question read and answered.
As I've said, if you leave a 5-star review and then proceed to crap on us, we'll read what you read. We don't care.
True.
We just want the 5 stars. Yeah. It's all about the algorithms.
That's exactly right. And then a quick reminder, sign up for the subscribe to the Locked On Lakers channel at YouTube. Really trying to get that going so we can keep adding some great content there, including mailbag questions. That's where a lot of this stuff will end up. We'll see everybody Wednesday. Thanks a lot.